session number 11212, reel 6.
Colonel Abby Humphreys, Reel 6. Could you describe, Colonel, a typical young officer's day with this battalion?
Breakfast, 7:30, quarter to 8. Adequate, nice, beautifully served. Walk across to your company office, all dressed up in your with your stick and everything. Had a little cane, leather cane. To get there by 8:39. If you were late, all hell was let loose. First thing that generally happened was that the company commander's orderly room, the delinquents were drawn up outside. One walked in, Sergeant Major saluted, and you were saluted back, and as I said before, you lined up with the company commander coming in a bit later, because he lived out anyhow, but even if they didn't, they were obviously a bit later than the subaltern officers. And then justice was meted out. If you had a soldier wanting justice, you were asked your opinion of the soldier. But you were there, whether you had your soldier or not. That didn't take long, because, well, I mean, sometimes only one soldier. Sometimes it wasn't one at all. Then your colour sergeant was next door, and the soldiers who used to go in and see about the pay or something like that, they would already be on parade. They were very likely doing parade on the square with the CSM had walked straight across after he'd done office and marched them onto the square. Some were very young soldiers because they were the people who had just come from the recruits who were waiting to go to India in a year's time. So they would go on hobnails and homespuns with rifles and everything on parade. Now, as we were the experimental machine gun battalion, we had this thing called the Carden Lloyd, which was a very top-heavy little tank affair, tractor affair, with two bins on either side. Very top-heavy, because as people travelled in it, they were on top of the bins, which was very high. And in the bins were machine guns and a machine gun, actually, and all its stuff in the other bin. And so the men fiddle about with Carden Lloyds to sort of learn the ins and outs of Carden Lloyds with an instructor who'd been on a Carden Lloyd course. I went on one later. That comes next thing. This part of this reel will be that. Bovington. And then they were all in their denims, in getting greasy, everything. And I would go, and rather, I expect slap my leg, really, and look at this going on, and offer some suggestions, perhaps, where I was capable of doing. Platoon sergeant, whole platoon would be doing it. Platoon sergeant would be overall, walking around. Yes, sir. Yes, I agree with you. Yes, sir. That machine gun ought to go that way. And then those who fiddled about with Carden Lloyds, which after all it was only a platoon of 30 men, and I've forgotten how many Carden Lloyds we had, one to each section, three, that's all, one Carden Lloyd to a 6 men. And then they had to go, and they did very lightly half a morning on that. And then they had to go and do minor tactics on the heath outside, sections, because although they were machine gunners, they had to get their gun off and do a minor tactic. So then that would be another half an hour, I expect, or now, quite actually an hour by the time they got out to Chobham Ridge into the heather. Then that would bring them to the break. They always had a neffy break, which is about 11 o'clock. And the officers went over to the mess, and say, in the winter, not so much in the summer because it was hot, had port and cake. There was coffee if you wanted it. Then you'd report back to your platoon, which was on the square, the sergeant major, to say, now I'll fall them in on the square again, sir, when you come back. And if there was any men for battalion orders, that was the CO's orders, it would be about mid-morning. And you, if you were the platoon commander, and it so happened that Percival Maxwell had had to, because he couldn't deal with it, pass it on to the CO, you had to go and give your stuff to the CO. And you called in on the adjutant. He said, yes, you wait here. And you marched in. Not right, left, right, left. Come in. Will you please come in, Mr. Humphreys? And you gave your stuff off. And the CO's eyebrows used to bristle and say, 28 days detention. It was a bad one. And the man was marched out straight to the guard room, into under a close arrest for the rest of his 28 days. Then you had came back again, as I say, after break very lightly, and the next thing you might have would be washing down of these Carden Lloyds, because terribly sandy. If you took them out, you couldn't really have them too much around the square, because they break up the concrete, the tarmac. You took them out and you swivel them round on the sand. The sand had all come up, you know. So they had to be spot on clean always. By that time, it's lunchtime. And then in the afternoon, there were generally games. Compulsory. The troops loved it. I mean, there was no compulsory football. It didn't mean anything to them. It was really compulsory. There's a number of grounds available, rugger things, and officers changed into their football kit or their rugger kit or something and took part as good as they were. I mean, Crackers was a wonderful rugger player, so he was always on the rugger field in the afternoon. And I played football, but I hated it. But I tried to play soccer. Well, that was hopeless with the Geordie, because, I mean, they are the most finest soccer players in the world. Well, they were in those days. And I made a fool of myself. Or playing hockey, when I bashed people with a stick when I shouldn't have done, and that sort of thing. And if one had a horse or anything, one was able to ride after tea, or in the winter, late afternoon. One officers were able to go and have a ride at, say, 3:30. So as they got an hour in on their horse, handed them back to the groom, who was waiting in the stables. And as I say, most of the afternoon was not work but sport, except for those who'd been naughty boys and were kept back to work. I mean, there were some, perhaps the platoon was naughty in some way, and although people didn't condone mass punishment, the platoon suffered because perhaps seven of its members had done something pretty naughty, and they had to work in the afternoon. You could do it on a section basis.
Do you recall that first platoon of yours was a fine platoon?
Yes, very fine platoon. I had a super platoon sergeant, Superman, called Davis, and I had a no Davis. That was second ten. Crump Davis. Oh dear, dear, dear. Not Flanagan. Beginning with F. I got it on the tip of my tongue. Something like Flanagan. Finnegan. And he was super. He was an old soldier who'd, I think he had World War I medals. San Vardy certainly did, and the other platoon sergeant. And he was, well, he was everything he should be. He was a mentor and an advisor to an officer, but not letting him realize that he was doing the advising. The young officer was giving him his head. One used to say, Sergeant Finnegan, what do you think about this? And he used to make a good answer. Or sometimes he said, I don't know, sir. What do you think? And as I say, that hinged on the whole thing. If he thought you were being disloyal to him by sort of, you know, doing something underhand against him, or you thought he was being disloyal to you by stirring up the troops against you or something. And you had three lance corporals, or corporals in charge of sections. I can't remember their names now, but one was a corporal, two were corporals, and one was a lance corporal. I wonder if there's a picture of him here. Right. Right, day went by and day went by. We worked on the Saturday morning. There was no question about Saturday being a day off. We shopped when we had our little cars, which I bought, a tiny one, for £5. And you could pop down to Deepcote, or you could go to Aldershot and go to the shops if you wanted something in the afternoon. You worked it in with your sport and your riding. And if you worked for the staff college or anything, which I wasn't doing because, of course, I thought about staff college, you'd be in your room studying in the afternoon. The adjutant was harder work than most because he got extra pay and he had to be there the whole time. The COs were very much morning soldiers. Jackie Churchill was a keen on golf, I think, and he and his wife used to go off. They had a CO's quarter attached to the barracks next to the QMs. And no, they didn't. They lived in Camberley, that's right. They lived in their own house with their own furniture in Camberley. And her name was Nita. She was a bit of an invalid. And they had a son at Eton who joined the regiment after the war. Oh, he wasn't at Eton then. I expect in 35 he'd be in his prep school.
What happened on a Sunday?
Sunday, It was a bullshit day. Up at your best polished boots, your best Sam, well, I mean, only one Sam Brown, sword, church parade, full-time church parade, for those C of E's. RCs were marched to church by another one, by an RC officer, if there was one, if not, by another officer, and just the RC church and the C of E were very close together in Deepcote. And people like Seabag was a Jew. He marched us down to the church, having fallen in on the barracks, and he went and had a sherry with the gunners in their mess next door while the service was on, and then came out smiling all over and saying, "Yeah, how I get saved," and marched us back up. And then after church, we always assembled in the mess, and then that was the time when we did have the odd drink. We could afford it by Sunday, having saved up on our £50 a year as well, you see. I mean, that put in another pound a week. So you had £9.10 a day. £9.10. So you had £6 taking off the £3 mess kit, plus another pound for your father's allowance, £7. Well, the sherries were very cheap. It was mostly wine. I didn't have gin and tonics and things like that. And a sherry was quite cheap. Perhaps you could afford two after church. Sitting about, and you generally change very quickly, rapidly, into your civilian clothes, and you either went out to see somebody, friend of yours, outside for lunch, or you might have gone to Farnham or something, trotted down in the little car to Farnham to a friend to lunch, or you'd go and see an officer who was in another regiment at Sandhurst and was in a mess in Aldershot for lunch, or you would go and you would have fun generally on a Sunday. I mean, Sunday was a day of rest after church parade. The soldiers' day of rest too. They mostly charpie bashed, if you know what that is. They loved their sleep. And, of course, in the evening they loved their women. They went out and looked for women in the towns around. And their drink, they enjoyed their beers. Of course, if they came in drunk, very badly drunk, they got put on a charge. And sometimes it led to absence because they were late for coming in. Therefore, they got put on a charge as well.
Did you have leave? Did you have leave?
Oh, yes.
And when did it come?
Well, that depended. I mean, if you were Easter, if you weren't orderly officer, you'd get a week's leave very likely, which is what you put in for. You put in the leave book. And if you'd been a good boy and say, the first one I had was Easter, I think, because it was April, early April, and I put in, I think, for 10 days or something a week, and I got it. I'd been a good boy. And then one had leave on courses if one had weekends. The one I went to in Bovington, I was completely superfluous, so was Bill Hutton, because being tanks, weekends, then we weren't needed. That's when I saw Lawrence of Arabia's bungalow being besieged by masses of people the afternoon at his funeral, when I was going past it at Clouds Hill after he'd been killed. And Wilkins was down there, Batter Edwards, and he had a weekend off if he could. Had enough money to go off to Bournemouth some of the high spots nearby, Weymouth, something like that. I went home. I went back to Mumbleshire. Drugging little baby Austin at petrol, one and tuppence a gallon. And Natter would go off to Weymouth and perhaps spend a night in a boarding house there and bathe and enjoy himself. Perhaps he'd go with the other batman, because Bill Hutton had a batman. They were great pals. And there was a Lance Corporal Crozier on the course. He'd be allowed to go with a Lance Corporal. Anyhow, funnily enough, he used to, when I was working in the D&M school, he told me this later. This ties up with the thing I told you. He used to take my car down to the beach, which was very near, beyond Wareham, have a bay. And I mean, the petrol gauge was such that didn't show the petrol had gone or anything like that. And one day, he and his Bill Hutton's batman, Confederate, Bill Hutton had a little baby Morris, which was only £10, I think, when he bought it. And they went in my little car, my little baby Austin. And it ran out of petrol, because the gauge, as I say, was a bit dicey at Wareham. And they had a terrible time, because they hadn't got any money on them to convince the garage man that they were wanting petrol badly. And he said, oh yes, well, of course you're static here. Of course I must give you some. You come this afternoon, pay me two shillings and fourpence. A gallon of petrol, one and tuppence. Anyhow, he was absolutely having kittens because the time was ticking away and would he get back in time before I came up for lunch and said, where's Wilkin, where's Batter, where's my car? And he did. He made it. And I didn't know that he hadn't been there the whole morning doing something in the mess, or I knew they went off to Wareham and places to bathe, but they were superfluous in the mess, apart from very, very odd duties as a mess waiter when there was a tank guest night and we were all in our finery there. That's Bill Hutton and I. And then the NCOs on the course were, of course, Sergeant's mess mostly. There was Sergeant Major Wiles. There was Sergeant Thompson, who was a know-all. There was Corporal Davis, and there was this Lance Corporal Crozier. And that was a little squad all on our own. No, Wiles was a sergeant. That's right, he was an older sergeant than Thompson. Thompson was called the Merch. I don't know why. He always professed he knew everything. He played for Arsenal or something at football, but he hadn't at all. He was pretty useless at football.
And what was the course, what were you doing on the course, what you were learning?
Learning about the innards of the utility tractor. So it was really an empty course. And by doing, I and Bill Hutton were not good on mechanics. We knew how to, we knew that our cars needed petrol, oil and water. And we knew that if the electricity went wrong, something you had to do, you turn the plugs or something. But we never knew anything about this complicated engine. It was a complicated engine because it was very difficult to get at. And by dint of doing wonderful diagrams, yellow for oil, I think it was, blue for water, red for electricity, brown for something else, I can't remember. Petrol, oil, and water. Oh, water is blue. Petrol would be, I think, green or something. Electricity was red. Water was blue. And, well, the five things. And the cycle. The cycle of a combustion engine. down, up, down, up, down, up, down, and all about carburettors. That was absolute nightmare to me and Bill. But we drew carburettors, little sketch maps. And, of course, you couldn't make them go up and down the float, but that sort of thing. And we drove tanks, and just an experience. And we drove these cardinaloids in the heath outside, just heath by the side of where Lawrence was crashed. And we did many things, but mostly mechanics sitting round an engine, a section engine. There were section engines of every blooming thing in the British Army, Rolls Royces and the lot employed.
But what date was this, Colonel?
This was 1935, and it was from April till July.
And what was the aim and objectives of this course? Was it because the army was becoming more mechanised and they thought that you...
Yeah, because we were the experimental machine gun battalion, and certain officers went on machine gun courses to learn about the machine gun, which I learned about later. But I was put on, then Bill, the first one we were put on was the MT course to be experts when we got back, so as we could sell our platoon and our platoon sergeant. That is the way you do that. And as I say, we got D's, actually, I mean distinctions, but we really got it for doing very fine drawings and rather hoodwinking one-eyed sergeant, Staff Sergeant Smith, who was a wonderful chap in the tanks. He'd lost an eye in a tank accident, and he was a wonderful instructor. And he was a great sense of humour. And he was the man who said, when we saw somebody walking around the D&M school with the chief instructor, Major Smedden, that is Lawrence of Arabia. And we wouldn't have known. He was walking along the other side with a whole lot of section. Well, 3 days afterwards, he had his crash. But you could see he was in a dirty little... He was a tiny little man in a dirty old Macintosh. It had been raining. And you could see the face was a sort of... You did that when you saw it from the other side. Oh, my gosh, yes, that is the man who wrote the Seven Pillars of Wisdom. That is the man who was a private soldier here as a storeman for years, and then became air craftsman, changed his name to air craftsman Shaw, and went to the air, as Cranwell, as an air craftsman, hobnails and homespuns and the lot. He never wore, he wore other ranks, uniforms, everything, because he thought he had let the Arabs down. That's the reason why. And he was still very much involved in Cloak and Dagger MI5, because the Abyssinian War was on, and he was involved in so much that his opinion of that part of the world, because it's not all that far from the Middle East, was being asked by the government. But we, of course, didn't know that at the time. It came out later. Came out when he was languishing in hospital with such bad concussion that he was rambling. And he rambled for many days. And they kept everybody away from the hospital in case he rambled onto his MI5 stuff. And apart from a tank corps man who was dangerously ill, he'd been crushed by a tank or something, his parents were allowed to go in. No one else was allowed into that little military hospital in Bovington.
When you got back to the battalion after your course, as you say, you were then in a position to be a little bit more helpful where engines and mechanics were concerned.
Yeah.
Was there any indication at this time of the kind of weapons and material that were coming in towards the end of the 1930s?
35. Yes, there was, because people like Oscar had gone to Hythe. They were in front of me. He'd done his anti-tank thing and he'd gone to Hythe in the summer. And he was the first course to do the ZGB, which was a Polish thing exactly like the Lewis gun. Well, not exactly like the Lewis gun, but not the Lewis gun, the Bren gun. It was very like the Bren gun. And only the officers from this brigade, South Stafford's young officers, because all young officers went to Hythe sometime the first year, and the Warwick young officers and the DCLI young officers and the DLI young officers did the ZGV, and it just come from Poland, and it was the last word. I mean, it broke up into four parts like the Bren gun did. It was the last word in, and of course that they spent their time firing on ranges and handling it and everything.